is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And looking at the entire summit, I think head of states were overwhelmed with issues that they really don't have answers to.
That's David Monnier, director of the Center for Africa Studies at the University of Johannesburg. On the weekend Africa Union summit that raised concerns over the perception that African governments are powerless to bring peace and security to the continent. Details coming up. Also, Dakar has exploded with joy after Senegal beat Egypt 4-2 in a penalty shootout yesterday to be crowned African champion. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Analysts are warning that a big wave of coup d'etats will hit Africa in the near future unless governments on the continent start to treat their citizens with more respect and do all they can to decrease poverty. The African Union, the AU, held its leaders' summit in Addis Ababa this weekend. The event has left many observers concerned that the AU and African governments appear largely powerless to bring peace and security to the continent. Darren Taylor has more.
The United Nations estimates almost 500 million Africans out of a population of 1.4 billion are forced to survive on less than $2 a day. This is the fertile ground, say analysts, fueling conflict across the continent. There have been six coups or military takeovers in Africa in the past 18 months, the highest number in decades. There are insurgencies by terror groups from east to west, north to south, with the extremists finding willing recruits in the world's youngest and poorest population.
And looking at the entire summit, I think head of states were overwhelmed with issues that they really don't have answers to.
Dr. David Monnier is director of the Center for Africa Studies at the University of Johannesburg. He says the world surely couldn't have expected the AU to do much more than issue its usual condemnations of unconstitutional changes of government and conflict in general, especially since the summit happened in Ethiopia, which has been at war with itself for more than a year.
And therefore, there's this sense of depression cutting across the continent. A major lesson is that poverty and democracy do not live hand in hand. They are enemies, and therefore, I think what we're seeing is the lack of development. And for us to push democracy at the expense of development, I mean, it won't make sense.
Ghanaian political analyst Latif Idrisu says African armies are once again gaining an appetite to oust governments, even when those administrations have been elected democratically.
With these countries where the coups have taken place, you have the masses supporting the military. You have the masses running on the streets, waving their nation's flag, saying yes, they support the coup. Why?
Idrisu says the military takeovers are backed by the people because the toppled governments often don't have the best interests of their citizens at heart. Look at Burkina Faso, he says.
The military have successfully undertaken their coup because they kept complaining to the president that we do not have the required weapons, we do not have the ammunition, we do not have the arsenal to fight these armed groups that are gradually gaining roots within our country. They are not just killing the military, they are killing civilians. So supply us with those.
When that arsenal wasn't forthcoming, says Idrisu, the army deposed the government. Monnier says it usually doesn't take too long before the military juntas or new administrations begin following the same path of corruption and neglect of citizens as those they've overthrown.
If we go back in history, it's a situation before the Second World War, economic depression, rise of fascism, and it's really a dangerous era that we're living in.
He says even when Sudan's military rulers kill protesters and the Ethiopian government starves and bombs the people of the Tigray region, the AU still welcomes them to the summit, even giving them a platform to condemn violence and human rights abuses. Monier says the hypocrisy of the AU is mind-blowing.
They condemn certain coups and they look at the other side in certain circumstances, one that you've described of what's happening in Ethiopia itself, the headquarters of the AU.
Monier believes Africa's in for a rough ride this year because he doesn't foresee its leaders and the AU soon becoming the people of integrity he says they should be. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Clashes erupted between rival militias in the Libyan capital Tripoli in the wake of parliament's attempts to oust the government of national unity, GNU, headed by Abdelhamid Al-Dabiba, and appoint a replacement. 33 loyalist militia leaders in Tripoli and Misrata have opposed the east-based parliament's attempt to oust the GNU. Meanwhile, media reports said 80 lawmakers support the appointment of former Interior Minister Fatih Basaga as Prime Minister. Wolfgang Poshtai, former military attaché in Libya, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi whether these developments could ignite a security threat in Libya.
A new prime minister can only take over if he has at least the acceptance or better, the support of the major Misrata militias and of some of the more important militias from the capital Tripoli. It is not realistic that someone else would be able to assume power. As it looks now, the militia support is split between the Dabiba and Basaga, but it is unlikely, very unlikely, that there will be a bloody fight between them. At least the Misrata militias don't fight against each other. The clashes during the last weeks and months in the greater Tripoli area were never ever about supporting the Dabiba or a rival. Those fights are usually about criminal businesses and about areas of influence. Regarding the role of Basaga, one must not forget he is a war hero. He was one of the first and most important leaders of the revolution in Misrata 2011, and in April 2019, he became the de facto strategic leader of the defense of Tripoli against Khalifa Haftar. He was one of the very few top leaders during the battle whose family did not leave Libya but stayed there, in Misrata to be more precise. Most of the Operation Volcano forces, especially the militias from Misrata, which is still the most powerful military bloc in western Libya, are still loyal to him.
But Dabiba will not surrender his authority unless there is elections.
If he doesn't have the protection from militias loyal to him in the capital, Tripoli, protecting his residence, protecting the prime minister's office, he will have no choice. So if the majority of the militias, especially if the majority of the Misrata militias, I would even call them kingmakers, decide or agree that Fatih Basaga takes over, this will be the case.
UN Secretary General's advisor for Libya, Stephanie Williams, said that the entire political class in Libya has been involved in the obstruction process when they feel that their personal interests or the interests of their expired institutions are threatened. And she stressed the necessity for maintaining a peaceful approach in resolving political differences instead of using force. With such obstruction and no final date set for the elections, what are the risk factors in Libya?
Williams is certainly correct, but she has been already warned to keep out of internal Libyan affairs by the HOR after her more or less open support for Dabiba. The main current risk factors for Libya are that Libya's regions will drift further apart, that the greater capital region will remain a militia hotbed with even more fighting between the various factions, and that ISIS and other terrorist groups will further intensify the campaign in the south and eventually also attack targets in northern Tripolitania. If Dabiba remains as a prime minister, it is very likely that the slow deterioration of the political and security situation will take place. His government will continue, I need to say, to ruin Libya's economy through corruption, questionable contracts and money gifts. One must remember that three ministers of his government are already jailed for fraud and corruption. Some more will allegedly follow soon, probably even next week. But if Dabiba is replaced by a new prime minister who is sincerely ready to fight corruption and to address also the grievances in the east and in the south, the situation could be somehow stabilized. Although even such a prime minister will face severe resistance also from within his own ranks. If there is a new prime minister who has not the support of the Misrata militias, Libya could easily end up again with two rival governments.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former military attaché in Libya, speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawi. Tunisian President Kais Saied today announced a plan to dissolve the national judiciary. According to the Associated Press, the president has accused the judiciary of corruption and nepotism. Opposition members say the move is just the latest example of the president's extreme power grab. Last July, following nationwide anti-government protests, Saied dismissed his prime minister, assumed all executive powers, and froze the parliament. He has been governing by decree since then, cracking down on corruption and throwing several lawmakers and business people in jail. A public funeral was held today for a 5-year-old boy who fell down a narrow 32-meter well in Morocco, prompting a massive but ultimately unsuccessful rescue effort. Large crowds gathered in the village of Igrahan to mourn the boy, Ryan, who was trapped in the hole for several days while rescue crews attempted to dig deep into difficult terrain. Messages of support, concern, and grief for the boy and his family poured in from around the world as the news of Ryan's death spread overnight Saturday. Morocco's King Mohammed VI called the parents to offer his condolences. A Nigerian oil company says three people are dead and four remain missing after one of its ships exploded and sank off the coast last week. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The top official of the Sheba Exploration and Production Company, Ikemi Funaukafo, confirmed the three fatalities from the explosion of the Trinity Spirit, adding that three survivors were found. He said the company's priority is to ensure the safe return of four crew members who are yet to be accounted for. The giant oil vessel, which was capable of carrying 2 million barrels of oil, exploded and sank last week off the coast of Warri in southern Delta State. Nigeria's environment minister on Saturday said the ship was carrying about 60,000 barrels, far below its maximum capacity. Energy experts like Odion Omonfoman say the incident raises environmental concerns.
There'll be massive environmental pollution there. I'm hoping that a lot of the barrels got burned when the ship caught fire. But even at that, it's a massive oil spill that we have in our hands.
No one knows the extent of the environmental damage caused to the coastal area. Local coast guards say the wrecked ship was partly submerged. An aerial image from the European Space Agency shows the oil spill stretching for several kilometers across the surface of the water. The Nigerian government's Oil Spill Detection and Response Agency is investigating. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
At least 10 people were killed and 48,000 displaced when Cyclone Batsirai struck Madagascar over the weekend. French news agency AFP correspondents saw the cyclone uproot trees and destroy buildings. Madagascar's meteorological office in a statement yesterday said rain will cause flooding across parts of the country. The World Food Programme, citing estimates from national authorities, said around 595,000 people could be affected by the cyclone and 150,000 more might be displaced. Because of new landslides and flooding, the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies say the storm poses a risk to at least 4.4 million people in total. Schools are opening again in Zimbabwe, where both parents and students are eager to see the education calendar continue after a long break due to COVID-19. From Harare, reporter Kuzaza Nwashi has the details.
Schools opened today, but there was no learning to speak of. Denford Ngadzuore is a councillor who is on a campaign trail for the coming by-elections.
I've been in most public schools in my ward. There are no teachers at school. Most all children are being sent home. Teachers are on strike. They are demanding a better wage. This is a very unfortunate situation, but it's affecting both the parents and the children. Parents are struggling to earn a living, and majority of those parents have managed to pay fees for their children. But unfortunately, those children have been sent home.
Obet Masaraure is with the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says there is a stalemate in schools.
Today, Zimbabwean schools failed to open doors for learning. Learners and teachers both failed to make it to the classroom in the majority of the cases. This is because learners are failing to get the school fees. Teachers are still incapacitated.
He says the government must intervene to keep the situation from getting worse.
We urge government to urgently convene an all-stakeholders engagement to dialogue around solutions on this, the education crisis. Secondly, we are calling for the restoration of pre-October 2018 salaries, which is USD 540 for all teachers. Thirdly, we are calling for education recovery grants for our schools, which are battling to recover from the shocks of COVID-19.
Masaraure says if there are no deliberate efforts to resolve this crisis, then they will escalate the stairway to street protests in partnerships with parents. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashi from Harare.
Last week, award-winning Ugandan author Kankwenza Fukir Abash Aija told of what he said was torture during his incarceration by the security services. Today, after witnessing images circulated in domestic media, Reuters reports that the European Union has demanded punishment for the perpetrators. In a TV interview, the 33-year-old author talked about how he was punched in the stomach, kicked, hit with gun butts, and made to dance endlessly, adding that his torturers used pliers to tear pieces of flesh from his body. The EU delegation in Uganda said it shared the public anger about reports of torture, arbitrary arrests, enforced disappearances, and harassment, as well as attacks against human rights defenders. On Friday, the U.S. Embassy issued a statement demanding prosecution of security personnel engaged in torture in Uganda. Human rights advocates in Africa are increasingly spearheading discussions to amplify women's voices in climate change talks. They say working with women at the grassroots level is essential in addressing their vulnerability to disasters aggravated by long-term shifts in temperatures and weather patterns. VOA's Ruben Chama reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Activists say that women, especially in Africa, are more vulnerable than men to the risks of extreme weather events such as drought and floods, but their voices are overshadowed when it comes to conversations around how to tackle the global climate crisis. Stella Agara is the Justice and Climate Action Leader at Akina Mama wa Africa, a Pan-African women's rights organization based in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The interference with the climate patterns basically means that those people who are depending on rain-fed agriculture can no longer be able to project their produce, neither can they determine whether they're going to be having food in the future, because the weather patterns have changed dramatically. We are experiencing El Nino and La Nina in different parts of the world right now. This basically means that certain groups are affected differently. Women are the main caregivers, and therefore they're the ones who have to think about what the family is going to eat long before anybody else has to think about it.
Some say there is an unending debate on whether climate change is real in Africa, yet the continent continues to experience changing climate patterns that threaten both human health and food security. Wangeshi Gitata Kiriga is a women's rights champion from New Faces, New Voices, an African advocacy group that focuses on expanding the role and influence of women in the financial sector.
One of the things that we're trying to do is really to build the economic resilience of women so that they're able to go through this crisis, find solutions to those challenges, but also be able to go ahead and put their solutions on the table and advance women's economic resilience. because I think it's really important that we hear from one another and also to share that knowledge, make our voices louder.
The group is an implementing partner of the Graca Machel Trust and is present in 16 African countries, including Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Kenya, Mozambique, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The women leaders also highlighted the gap between conversations of the Conference of Parties, the decision-making body that monitors the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and implementation mechanisms. Agara says key players need to find opportunities for women to participate meaningfully in the benefits of climate change projects. They include carbon credits, a type of permit that encourages countries or other holders to reduce greenhouse gases released into the environment.
Africa has contributed the least to the climate change problem, and yet we are going to bear the biggest brunt of the climate crisis. Most of the industrialization that has been happening in this world has been happening in the West, in the global North. Coal mining and all those other practices that have contributed to lots of carbon emission in our ozone layer has not been happening in Africa. But in terms of the crisis, we are going to bear the biggest brunt because we are not prepared at all to deal with the situation. And as far as surviving the situation is concerned, we don't even have the kind of resources that we require.
Conversations for reducing climate change are growing, but often fail to include women in decision-making, leading to slow progress in the implementation of long-term and adaptable solutions. Gitata Kiriga explains.
Even this climate change conversation is pegged on the COVID-19 pandemic, because during COVID, a lot of women experience gender-based violence, especially in the home. Women are the ones who are thinking of nutrition. They're the ones who are thinking of energy. They're the ones who are trying to feed their children. And when those stresses that come with different shocks, whether those are caused by a global pandemic or they're caused by climate shock, unfortunately, women are the ones who end up bearing that brunt.
Some say women have been forced to find ways to attend climate change forums and conversations and negotiate as key stakeholders. Sometimes they have even had to organize their own separate meetings for women to be heard. Activists say women's voices are key to the success of projects that aim to protect communities against rising temperatures and drought. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Dakar exploded with joy after Senegal beat Egypt yesterday 4-2 in a penalty shootout and was crowned African champion at the Cup of Nations tournament. Senegal's president Macky Sall, according to the French news agency AFP, congratulated the football heroes and declared today a national holiday to celebrate the brilliant victory. The president, who had been due to visit Comoros at the end of a trip to Egypt and Ethiopia, cancelled the last leg to welcome the triumphant Lions on their return to Dakar today. A festive atmosphere has spread across the capital, with national flags hanging from buildings, vehicles and sidewalks. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week
right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 15.